Welcome to the Girl Gang Craft Podcast, where we dive in deep to all things business, wellness, creativity, and activism for artists and entrepreneurs. We talk with impactful, female-driven companies and founders for an inside look at the entrepreneurial experience, where you'll come away with tangible steps to elevate your business. Are you ready? I'm your host, Phoebe Sherman, founder of Girl Gang Craft, artist and designer and marketing obsessed. We're here to learn together how to expand our revenue, implement new organizational techniques, and cultivate best business practices as we work towards creating a life doing what we love. Let's get started. Hello, hello. Welcome back to Girl Gang Craft, the podcast. It's Phoebe here, your host, as always. Today, we are talking with Andrea Casanova. She is a friend, fellow Virgo. We only interview Virgos on this podcast. No. JK, that's not true. But I'm a Virgo, sun sign. Anyways, Andrea, she's a fellow Virgo and fellow Adobe ambassador. So we sat at the same table, two Adobe Maxes in a row. And we're going to talk about that a little bit in this episode. This episode is amazing. Andrea is so knowledgeable about really so many things. And we dive into mental health, content creation, and like business structure, what works for you and what doesn't, and what worked for her and what doesn't. And hopefully you can take a little inspiration from that. But before we hop into my interview with her, apps are open. So apps are open for all of our East Coast and West Coast events. That's Salem, Providence, Oakland, Sacramento, our new city. And you can apply to all our events at girlgangcraft.com/events, plus our Mother's Day gift guide, which is also available to sign up for. And our Mother's Day guide, if you have any sort of product or service that is relevant to a mother in your life or your customer's life, go ahead and get on our Mom's Day gift guide. So really good opportunity to get in front of moms and folks who are gifting for moms for Mother's Day. Let's hop into the episode. Andrea is a celebrity viral marketer born in Venezuela and currently based in Los Angeles. Her multicultural and youthful approach breathes new life into global brands and successfully targets millennial and Gen Z audiences. A powerful keynote speaker and panel host, she has become the go-to source on storytelling and thoughtfulness in her community, sharing tips and tricks to help her followers and beyond level up in all areas of their lives. Let's get into it. Hello, hello, creatives. Welcome back to Girl Gang Craft, the podcast. Today we have my friend and fellow Virgo and fellow Adobe ambassador on the podcast, Andrea. Welcome to Girl Gang Craft.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to be here. I know that this has been in the calendars for a while, and I'm just so glad that we were able to touch base in the new year. Yeah, new vibes, new energy. Coming in with all my Virgo self this year.
I love it. I love it so much. So a little background, Andrea and I have both been Adobe Express ambassadors for a bit, and we sat at the same table for 2 years in a row. And last year we made these little like monsters of like whatever was, I don't know.
Your insecurities, your voice.
Your insecurities. In your head. Mm-hmm. I just immediately thought anxiety monster, but that isn't for everyone, I guess. But mine was a little anxiety monster. Yours was like a little octopus situation.
Yeah, mine was like a little octopus and it actually looked kind of cute. I'm hoping I can find it so that I can show you. But it was really cute. It was just like angry. Just because I feel like our insecurities, and getting deep already, like 1 minute in, but like I feel like our insecurities need to be nurtured a little bit more, not so much demonized. Just because at the end of the day, if you break them down, it's like, yes, I'm insecure about something, but it's most likely because a past experience reinforced that belief. And who knows who I was during that time experience. It could have been a teenager, a child, early 20s. I'm still in my mid-20s now, but could have been in a moment where I was like really vulnerable. So I don't want to demonize those insecurities and whatnot. So that's why my little octopus was the cutest little thing. It was just like a little angry.
I love that. And that's so interesting because for me, I think, well, I mean, I like cute things also. And like, I wanted mine to be pretty, but I wanted it to be a monster still because yeah. It's so complicated, right? You want to like accept your stuff. You want to accept your anxiety for me. And then also, I kind of liked that we did the exercise putting like a face to our trauma, our stuff, our whatever, because then it's sort of like, it can be separate. And I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it.
100%. I also think it was really interesting how it's like the personification of an emotion or insecurity or a thought and whatnot. It helps you separate it from yourself to the point that you are not so hypercritical, because it's always like, oh, I have imposter syndrome. I have anxiety. But what if it's just like a little entity that like comes by and then leaves? Like, it doesn't have to be a part of you, even if it's like a result of an experience. I really like the exercise and I feel like it helped all of us bond at that conference. And it was like, yeah, it's super cute.
I think I have pictures of both of ours somewhere. So yeah, maybe I'll put them in the podcast notes.
I must have one. Plus, it was so cute. And remember when I was trying to like share it with everyone, my phone didn't work or something like that?
Oh, yeah, you were on my phone. So it has
I was on your phone. Yeah, and it didn't work because it kept showing on your phone, but it wouldn't show on screen. And I'm like, well, people are not ready for that piece of art.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Okay. Do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and what your business is about?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Andrea and I'm originally from Venezuela. I was born and raised in Latin America. And then at the age of 17, I came to the US to pursue the American dream, which quickly turned into a nightmare when my parents went bankrupt. They were struggling with money a lot. And because of so many visa regulations, you're not allowed to work. You're not allowed to do like many things. And so I had to hustle and figure it out. And it was a very challenging experience. To this day, it still is, figuring out the do's and don'ts of being an immigrant and obviously the many different processes that we have to go through and the many challenges that were thrown our way simply by existing. It's crazy. It's like we're taxpayers and we do all these things, employ Americans and whatnot, and it's somehow still not enough. And so it's been definitely a challenge, but it did teach me a lot on how to hustle, how to get myself into rooms that I normally wouldn't be in, how to get clients that normally wouldn't have answered a proposal just because I had to do a lot of work for free. But I strategized it in a way where I could get their names and get their brands as part of my portfolio, right? So with all that being said, I'm a viral marketer, entrepreneur, and social strategist. I focus on how can we get as many eyes possible on the parts of your story that really connect people and convert customers? And I've been doing this since the Vine in YouTube days. And now, obviously, TikTok, Reels, Shorts, all of that good stuff. I went through a journey of startups, corporate, and all that stuff. And then eventually, in 2019, I started working at a company whose main client was TikTok. And so I got the chance to spearhead TikTok simplification program here in the US and in Europe and drive user acquisition, meaning downloads for them, which was really cool because it taught me all about vertical video strategy and how to onboard brands onto such platforms. So from there, I was like, I'm going to do this by myself. So I left in 2020. And ever since then, I've been initially started as an agency. As I scaled it, realized that it's just not the type of work that I want to be doing. And then have been a solopreneur ever since, just coaching brands, coaching creators, public speaking, doing workshops. And yeah, it's been a lot.
That's so exciting. I mean, first of all, congrats. You do such cool work and you've been doing it for such your actual business for such a short time. So that's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Of course. And I didn't know the TikTok thing. So that's really interesting. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that? Because I think that's really fascinating coming from someone who's so like working with TikTok on a personal brand side and someone who was like in TikTok.
Yeah, 100%. So back in 2019, this was pre-pandemic. So by then, Musical.ly and TikTok had already merged, and TikTok was an uprising platform within Gen Z. But the usual stereotype was there's a lot of dancing, there's a lot of banana breads, there's a lot of stuff happening in there that didn't really resonate with a larger audience at the time. Obviously, this was before the pandemic kind of did our jobs for us and viralized the app itself, and it became a place for connection. But in 2019, I was at this startup makeup, and I genuinely thought that I was going to be, I don't know why, because looking back, I'm like, why would I even think that? But I thought I was going to be there forever. It was one of those things where like the startup world really put that in my head of we're building this together. We, right? Until the week gets laid off. And obviously at that moment, it was really scary for me because work and immigration processes are closely tied together. So you have to move quick. You have to get the next gig really quick. Within 2 weeks of getting let go, I got the job at the agency Sapphire, who is TikTok's one of, I think, top 10 agencies in the world, which is really cool. And I had to work directly with the Beijing team, which was really cool because it was basically working with the team that created Douyin, which is the original OG TikTok. And so working with TikTok on the behind the scenes was definitely a challenge. A lot of new things just thrown at us. This was at the time where meme marketing was really, really, really like big strategy for growth hackers, meaning we would partner with meme pages and whatnot, try to get downloads for the apps. So we definitely had to hustle a lot. And I think that working with TikTok on the back end really, especially in the beginning, helped me understand the direction where they're going. So I've had, like, I wouldn't say inside scoop. There's no like information that has been provided to me specifically, but just like being behind the scenes allowed me to just put two and two together and see what they're doing over there. Then now they're bringing over here, for example, live streaming, and now TikTok having places here in the US where people can go and film live streaming and sell products and whatnot. That's something that Douyin has been like doing for the past, I would say, 5 to 7 years, if I'm not mistaken. So they've built a $1 billion industry off of that. So it's like over there, they're usually a couple steps ahead. So it's like being able to work with TikTok allowed me to really grab all of that knowledge. And now that I'm giving that, some of that knowledge to brands and creators and whatnot, really, I feel like puts me at a competitive advantage.
So how did you take all that knowledge to grow your own business?
Honestly, this is going to sound so petty, but when I left my former agency, and I love them so much, like I'm still very close to the founders, mentors, and friends of mine, I just felt like I wanted more leadership. And I felt like I wasn't really being seen as the leader that I could be per my skill sets. And so I was like, you know what? Why do this for someone else, especially for men? Why do this for men? So I just decided to take the leap. And literally after my performance review, I was just like, great, thank you. I will leave. Literally, that was just verbatim. And my bosses were very, very supportive. I remember them giving me even like 2 months in advance. They're like, just in case, you know what I mean? Like, just take this. And my whole thing was, can I make as much revenue as they did on their first year? That was my whole thing. My friends thought it was petty. My accountant was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I just want to prove that I can do that so that I know that I made the right move. And this is not to say that anyone needs to do this at all. This is like probably the worst advice I've ever given publicly. But I think it was just a moment of challenging myself and my beliefs. And obviously when you come at a place where like there's a lot of people, let's say, giving a promotion over you or a lot of broiness and whatnot. Again, I absolutely love them. But obviously, like the pandemic changed a lot of behaviors because I couldn't go into an office as much because I have a household that's immunocompromised and whatnot. So definitely there was a lot of bonding that I missed out on. And obviously that usually reflects on the opportunities that you do get to put your hands on, right? So for me, it's like, I want to just prove that I can do this and whatnot. So I did surpass the revenue of the first year, which is really funny. We still joke about that. But then there, I realized like, I don't like the agency world. It's that you definitely have to be built for it. And I don't want to say it was easy for me to scale, but I could scale it so effortlessly and seamlessly that at some point I was like, I just don't think that this, like managing multiple employees and multiple clients and multiple asks and whatnot, is going to be something that I want to have forever. And so 2023 in April was my last time offering a done for you service because I just kept like one client or two clients just so that I, you know, could keep that. But that was just my last time offering done for you services. Ever since then, I've just been coaching, public speaking, content creation, and all of that stuff.
That's so interesting. Really, to think about the agency versus like the solopreneur style business structure. And I guess I'll say, I've been thinking about what it would be like to be an agency over here. Mm. And I've been thinking about it for a while. Are we going to go in that direction? I don't know. To y'all listening. But I can see how it can be, it's very like tangible to scale. You get a client, you can count on that revenue, which is different than what you and I do. Like, our revenue is not dependable, like, at all. What does that look like to have that? And I'm curious about, like, more of some of the reasons why that didn't work for you.
Yeah. And this is not to make anyone shy away from growing an agency, because I think that it just works for some people and it just doesn't for others, period. Same way that my lifestyle probably wouldn't work for other people. But I think that for me personally, I'm highly sensitive. I'm a mental health advocate, so I talk a lot about my mental health journey. And agencies for me did require a lot of interpersonal relationships, right? You're learning how to manage a team, how to manage your own time. You're learning how to manage the team at another company. You're managing different budgets of clients. I remember I had a client that would pay me $400 a month, which it was absolutely nothing. Then I had others that would pay me $10,000 a month. And it's like, yes, obviously there's packages and whatnot, but sometimes you sign a client just out of desperation and whatnot. And then you get angry at the expectations that you set in the first place, right? So it's like, it's almost like a mind game 24/7. And in addition to that, a lot of brands saw the value in the beginning, had solid budgets, and then truthfully, like, content, and when it comes to like growing someone else's page and whatnot and getting them people like UGC creators to create them and whatnot, like, it's relatively affordable to them to just go to a creator directly and just pay them $200 for a video image in perpetuity type of shit. You know what I mean? And so for me, there was a lot of that where I just didn't feel aligned in my gut. I felt horrible. Like, first of all, the margins were not being met because I genuinely wanted to pay these creators fairly. And I also didn't want to like be asking for someone's image in perpetuity or like this and that. You know, those are things that are a big no-no for my values. And it's just something that most actually, if not all of them, would ask for. And I think that it just came to a point where it was just not aligning with my values. I'm making more money now with less time and energy being spent on something. So it just wasn't for me, like the scalability of it, the model of it and whatnot. But I have other friends who are so happy with it. They can never see themselves doing what I do on a day-to-day basis. So I guess it just really takes a certain archetype to pull it off. And again, it's not hard in my opinion. It's just like, it's a person's game, right? It's who you know. Let's get one client, let's get the other, let's retain them. Because that's something that you also see a lot in this space. It's like, oh, I'm getting 10K clients. And it's like, great. Do they stay on for 1 month or do they stay on for the 6 months? Yeah, right. It's like retention's more important to me. So it's like, it's just a lot, definitely. So that's why that part didn't necessarily align with me.
What does your business look like today? Do you still have a team? I mean, here's three questions at once. I would love to know about your team, sort of like what your revenue breakdown is. You don't have to share numbers, but like what those revenue streams look like.
Yeah.
Those are two questions. Let's start with those.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, what my business looks like nowadays, it's very purpose-driven at the moment. So for me, something that I debated a lot with last year was, okay, I'm doing this, but why? It was like the constant questions, what am I doing this? And we are taught to have like some noble why of like change the world, do this, do that. Could be as easy as I want to make sure that the generations to come are financially free. Could be as easy as I just want to make sure that I have more time to spend with my loved ones, right? So it took me a really long time to figure out my purpose. And that's like a whole other conversation. But after that, I realized that I wanted to focus on a couple of things. One of them was coaching one-on-one. I love connecting one-on-one with people. Obviously, that's higher ticket just because you're getting almost like not necessarily a done for you type of thing, but you are getting specific strategies. Like, yeah, I'm not executing, but you are getting my help and I'm holding your hand through the way. In addition to that, I host workshops. I adore my workshops. They're usually intimate, 5 to 25 people at most, and they're mid-ticket. In those types of workshops, it's from brand storytelling to planning your year. I just hosted my first one this month, and it was all about how to plan your year as a creative and whatnot. So definitely a lot of pillars to pull from. I don't consider myself solely a brand strategy person, because at the end of the day, brand strategy is a mindset game, right? So it's like, I think that I can touch upon different, no way, shape, or form. Someone asked me, are you a life coach? Absolutely not. I'm too messy for that. But definitely consider myself a person who's just walked the walk, you know what I mean? So from vision boarding to planning your year to brand storytelling, those are things that I consider myself to be a master of. And so I think that from there, I just kind of like put one in one area. I'm teaching brand strategy on a one-on-one. It could be that my workshop is on vision boards. In addition to that, I am starting my digital product journey. I recently launched my $11 vision board mini course, and I adored it because it was super simple to put together. It took me 1 hour to film and edit, and people loved it. I think I am comfortable with sharing this part of the revenue just because I want to show people how easy it is to put together a low ticket offer and just get it out there. I used The Leap for this, and I'm actually coming in as an advisor for them, which is really cool. And I sold over $10,000 worth of that mini course just from December to January. And this was with content, again, that I was going to be making anyway. Like, I love talking about vision boards, so why not go ahead and monetize a concept? Rather than thinking that I have to monetize a whole brand, right? I would say that those are my primary, my preferred sources of income. But the most consistent actually are public speaking and brand deals, just because I feel like there's a lot of opportunities out there because the amount of brands that are just realizing the power of social media and the power of vertical video platforms is unreal. Like, you'd think that we're too late. We're like super early in the game. So those definitely are very consistent. But from a business standpoint, the coaching, workshops, and digital products, consulting as well. And then from the creator, more personal brand standpoint, public speaking and content creation for brands.
And you have no team currently, just you.
I actually did have a team. I hired my first employee, I would say 8 months after I went full time. It was a big jump and whatnot. And that went great. Eventually, I just realized that, especially last year, that I was operating from a place of zero. And when you're operating from a place of zero, you're not a good leader. And I never want to give people a subpar experience of what it's like to work with me or for me. Last year, I have been working with my content producer for almost 2 years now, where he's in charge of my podcast, my videos, and all of that stuff. So I definitely did have some work on that end. I haven't done, like, I decided to just put that contract on pause since December because I'm really evaluating how I want to show up this year. And last year was really hard with my mental health, so I didn't want to be managing people and doing all of that stuff. But yes, solopreneur for now again.
I love it. So what does your day-to-day look like? Like, how do you organize your day? Because I know you're a Virgo and I know you have some organizational systems. Yeah, let's talk about that. How do you organize your day? What do your weeks look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, I'm in my investor / revenue equity girly era, which means that I'm coming in as an advisor and as a partner at a couple companies in exchange of equity and other cool things and whatnot. That's just to say the least, because I'm truly like just getting the hang of it, guys, and I don't want to be giving you guys the wrong terms and whatnot. But as of recently, I took on a partner role at a company called Sonic Gods, and we develop TV shows. So it's like a whole new other part of my career that I'm super excited about. And I'm coming in to grow their franchises and spearhead that franchise growth, which is super cool. And our first show, we just wrapped up the taping of it, comes out on a major streaming network. I almost just leaked it, and on a major streaming network in April. So I'm super excited about that. It's a huge opportunity, and I've had the chance to work with the brands who are integrated within the show super closely. It's a reality TV show for entrepreneurs, similar to Shark Tank and all of that good stuff. So I'm super hyped. But with that being said, there's a lot more structure now than there was before. Like, if you had asked me this question back in November, I would say that I just wake up at 11 a.m. and just go with the flow. But as of right now, it's like right after this, I have to go and brainstorm with some of their clients at the office and all that stuff. So I would say that on a week-to-week basis, I try to map out what my days are going to be like for content creation and what my days are going to be like for business, because I don't like splitting my brain when it comes to like, okay, I am a creator, I'm an art creative, versus I am a logical person at this moment. Because if I do both on the same day, it can get very chaotic. Now, I know that not a lot of people have the privilege to be able to just have different days for that. So there's strategies that we can talk about. But as far as for me goes, definitely Mondays and Fridays, I like to chill. I like to call those my CEO days. I focus on admin tasks. As I'm able to get creative, I go ahead and do it. And then from Tuesday to Thursday, I dedicate that to clients or partners that I'm advising. And those days tend to get really hectic. Usually the first half of the day, it's always dedicated to brainstorming because that's where my brain is like the highest. Then middle of the day, it's usually meetings, anything else that I need to do in addition to that. And then I am in also my Let's Go for Coffee and Lunch era with everyone, since the entertainment industry have, I would say 90% of it is just going on lunches and meeting other execs at other production companies and whatnot. So that is literally my life right now. Every single day, there's most likely a lunch with someone and whatnot. So definitely a lot more structure than there was before.
Our schedules are very similar. I also do a Monday CEO day. Friday is like finances for me. And like, let's be real, I just sort of like keep on putting that off. So it's like next Friday will be a finance Friday. I actually am going to just finish up tasks Friday. Tuesday, Thursday, same for me, clients and community. And Wednesday, content.
Oh, yeah. I also do sometimes Wednesday content. Some of my friends like do Monday content. I also just like, if I feel like in the moment, like I just want to get something out, I just go ahead and shoot it. But otherwise, definitely, I like Wednesdays too. It's like a little fun addition to the hump day.
Yeah, I agree. My sister's also in the TV world. So she is always going to lunch or drinks or coffee with someone, and that's her job.
It's so uncomfortable. I mean,
she does other things also.
It's definitely a new learning experience for me, just because I hate asking for things. That's another thing. It's like for my year, it's my year of asking, because you never get what you don't ask for, right? It's like, oh, let's go to lunch. Okay, cool. Let's meet these other execs of these other companies and pretend I know what I'm talking about. And hopefully some partnership is able to happen. So definitely an interesting journey that I'm embarking on.
I would love to hear a little bit about your brand partnerships, because like you said, that's a huge part of your revenue, a huge part of your time. And you also mentioned being on the other side of things, only paying UGC creators $200 and asking for their images forever. And I guess I want to say on a personal note, last year, brand partnerships were hard for us. Like, it was hard to get a lot of at least new brand partners. I think our like brand partnership relationships that we had before, like, we're able to continue. This year, I already feel that it's going to be easier. Like, people are already like more excited about things. I don't know what that is. But yeah, maybe a little bit about your brand partnership strategy and what that looks like.
Yeah. So last year was an interesting one, right? Because the second that entertainment advertising revenue just pauses, everything else pauses because of the strikes lasting nearly the whole year. Like, obviously, there's going to be a lot of compromises on that front. It didn't just affect, obviously, the majority of the damage was done to actors and the crews and all of that stuff, but it also affected a lot of the branding and marketing world, because obviously so much depends on that type of advertising. And it just,
honestly, I never made that connection. That's so fascinating. I know you're in that world and you're in LA. And so, like, I'm getting secondhand information from my sister and stuff too, but like, those things like never really connected for me. So that's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, if you even think about it, like when it comes to recessions, the recession is really cost. Like, at the end of the day, if you break it down, it's about people pulling spend and being super conservative about it. It's more the fear mongering. And obviously, like, this is a systemic issue. People should be paying more, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I'm not taking away from the big guy and how they're responsible for that. But I also will say that, like, it's a moment that all of us go, we're not going to spend any money because the recession's coming. That's the recession. In my opinion, that's the whole recession. It's the second that you like decide to not keep swiping most cards, because we interrupt the flow of money. It's the same thing with when it comes to like big advertising revenue. I mean, think about Barbie having like, I forget what it was, but it's millions and millions. Was it 100 million?
I don't know. I want to say 26 million, but maybe I'm just pulling that up out of my mouth. Maybe that was their film budget and maybe their marketing budget was 100 million or something like that.
Yeah, $150 million on marketing for Barbie.
I think their film budget was less.
Which is more than the $145 million budget used to produce the movie, yes. So
I don't know where the 26 so, came like, from.
Imagine that across the board. Like, I think that Barbie just came out like the week before something, the strikes started to happen more in depth, because the writing strike happened first and then the actor strike. And imagine that amount of money just like paused across the board. That also affects a lot of the creatives, because a lot of like red carpets or events that go hand in hand with that obviously are canceled. So definitely a lot of things. There's so many things that attribute it to last year being a freaking crappy year, to say the least. For me, it was a similar experience where there was maybe not a lot of new partners, but I will say my partners that I've had for the past 3 years that I've been content creating, they were really consistent. So I did still hit revenue goals on the brand front. So I want everyone to know that they're still possible. My year was great. I actually am so grateful for that, because since my mental health was so hard last year, this is the revenue that kept me going. Because I didn't want to be hosting workshops or doing one-on-ones and whatnot. I just couldn't do it. So I'm so grateful for the brands that did support me in the process. Those were Nationwide, Adobe, Google, like Google Pixel. I'm blanking on a couple more, but there were definitely a lot of brands who like supported me in the process. And as far as my brand strategy, honestly, I focus on long-term collaborations as much as I can. I am managed by Whaler, which is a very powerful creator agency. And it's just on the rise. And I do appreciate that they do try their best to get the best deal for both the brand and also the creator. So I will say that my numbers look differently when I was pitching. Well, I never pitched really, but when brands would reach out to me, I was like, oh, can I get paid like $1,000 for this TikTok or whatever? And that has exponentially, I would say even 10x'd or something along the lines because of my managers being a little bit more savvy on how they present them. It's also less awkward because I don't have to ask.
That's huge. So, congrats.
Thank you. But there's definitely a lot of long-term partnerships. So the more that you're able to prioritize long-term partnerships, the better. I will also say that I think that the conversation about brand partnerships is something that we're going to have to pivot eventually, just because the creator economy, there's a lot of buzz around it, right? Like $1 million industry, da 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 da. But at the end of the day, we are not seeing the levels of impact that we used to see from like an influential, impactful person. Maybe we're seeing it from a group of people. Like, think about it. Nowadays, it's like these group of creators are hyping up this product versus before it was like it took one YouTube video for one product to blow up. And we're still seeing some phenomenons like the Alex Erlis, my name Michael. But that's changing in a digital environment. You know what I mean? Like everyone's valuing digital spaces a lot more and whatnot. So that's not to fearmonger, but more to help you understand that you should prioritize becoming the brand over only working with brands. This is a moment where think about what you can offer other people. Is it a course? Is it a webinar? Is it workshops? Is it public speaking? Is it going into entertainment? I think that the future, honestly, of social media will, at the end of the day, be entertainment. It's a cycle that comes back around. And so I think that it's just prepping for those moments where times are slow, you know what I mean? And you don't have brand partnerships coming in. Is how can you make sure that there's additional things that you're working on?
Yes, 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 yes. I mean, a lot of the community listening, we have a huge product-based business focus, and we do have also a lot of people who do both, since I do both, and also some graphic designers, photographers, etc. And one of the main things that I always say is diversify your revenue streams. Even if you're just a product-based business, like how can you tap into some of the service things? How can you tap into brand partnerships? I think the entertainment factor is so interesting and such like a, it feels so far away. I feel like maybe it's closer to you because you've literally already stepped your toes. You're living in LA, but people who are not living in LA, it feels far, but it's also so close because right on TikTok, on Instagram, it's an attention economy. You're trying to take up as much attention as possible. And hello, that's TV, right? The ads, like our social media is just becoming a network, or a TV network, like ads, content. It's the same thing. So like the steps are there. And I mean, thinking about turning yourself into a brand and even like extending how much attention you're taking up, right? Moving into long form video, even if it's just 2 minutes or 3 minutes, how can we start to integrate that onto YouTube? How can you take up 45 minutes? How can you take up like a feature film? It's right there. And I think the entertainment world has so much money. These brands have so much money, like the Super Bowl. I mean, that's such a far example, right? But like, it's close. It could be really close. Like, how can we think big? How can we tap into these areas that have money while also serving that $11 offer?
Yeah, 100%. That's the balance of it, right? I never thought I was going to have an $11 offer, considering that my one-on-ones are between $5,000 to $10,000. But it's just one of those moments where I realized this is not part of my core identity. Like vision boarding is a content parallel that I'm passionate about, but it is not, like I wouldn't most likely not put out, who knows, I'll change my mind probably, but I would most likely not put out something on like a whole course in storytelling for $11. I might put out a little downloadable and whatnot because that is where I created a lot of my trust with my audience. So obviously I don't want to jeopardize that sort of trust with them, but it's one of those things where, like, if you're passionate about XYZ and you've created about it and it's a content parallel, right? Like vision boarding, it's dream mapping, it's business mapping, it's content mapping, right? So it's like, it makes sense. Like when you think about it, oh, it makes sense. And so it was accessible and allowed me to also grow my newsletter. So it's just one of those things where, like, we need to start hustling a little bit more. Honestly, I don't know about you, but I feel like this year, like last year was a year of fucking chaos. Sorry. Chaos.
You can swear. You're allowed.
But this year to me just feels like, okay, get up. Let's go. Let's go. Like, you got enough, I wouldn't say rest, but I definitely got enough of a slow season so that I can come back and be like, this is the year. For me, my three words are radiate. Like, I want to radiate everything that I do from the depths of my heart, my soul, and my connection to source and faith. Everything that I do has to come with a purpose. The second one is ask. Like, I don't even want to share details right now because it's still in the works, but I got two major opportunities to be featured on major outlets simply because I just asked, hey, can I just be featured on this? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, okay, cool. Was that easy? I've had this on my vision board for 5 years. Okay, cool. I didn't know that I could just ask. And then the last one is just like, water the seeds that you've planted. You never know what seeds that you've planted years before, even if that was a conversation with someone else. Like, if you are thinking about someone right now as I'm saying this, it's most likely a sign that reach out to them and water that seed. Go for lunch, ask how you can support them and whatnot. And that's this year for me. It's diversifying all of that and also watering those seeds.
I love it. Let's talk about mental health and how you take care of yourself. I know you've been public about taking care of your mental health. Do you want to talk a little bit about that journey?
Absolutely. So TLDR, long story short, I've been struggling with my mental health, and not struggling actually, let me reframe that, but like more living with a different mental health experience. And I didn't realize how different it was until I started taking medication. I'm like, wow, y'all just live like that? Like, that's crazy to me. People could just like go through the day not panicking. But with that being said, ever since I was really young, I knew that I was just highly sensitive. And there was always a disconnect because obviously, I don't want to generalize, but in Latina community, we usually have families that just don't believe in mental health. They don't believe in therapy. Like, I remember at some point, my parents used to make fun of me for going to therapy. It was definitely really hard growing up like that because I never understood why I was feeling a certain way. Even like digestive system issues, like my stomach always hurting. And I always just thought like, oh, I'm probably eating something. But in reality, it was my anxiety manifesting through my digestive system, which are highly connected. Your gut health, your mental health, both very similar. Well, both come from the gut. It was very challenging growing up like that. I just definitely had a completely different experience of the world. And as I moved to the US, obviously there came another layer of feeling unsafe because of my immigration processes, being scammed by many lawyers, facing so many challenges. It's just like, it was a lot. It was definitely a lot that I am now processing after years of being here. And obviously it's been great, but these are things that behind the scenes are just affecting you and you don't realize it until one day. I love this quote. It's like, grief, how do you manage grief? And it's by running from it until it finds me in the middle of the day on a sunny street. Something like that. It's the same thing with mental health. It's like, how do you deal with mental health? Running from it until one day it just finds me in bean aisle from the grocery store and suddenly I just have a mental breakdown there. You know what I mean? So that's pretty much how I dealt with my mental health. I have been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, which is the inability to self-regulate and the inability to keep a consistent self-image. And I've been going to therapy for it since I got diagnosed 2 years ago. And it's been life-changing for me. I go to hypnotherapy in particular. It's done wonders for mental health. I truly just like, I'm so grateful for my support system. And last year came with a different set of challenges. I always explaining how last year just, I felt like broke me down into little pieces so I could build myself back up in a way that made more sense to build like a stronger foundation. Last year, my year started with my dad almost dying and literally spending weeks in the hospital and then losing his leg. My immigration processes were becoming tough to like navigate. And finally, that's all out of the weeds. So thank God. But it was too hard to be dealing with my dad dying, taking care of them financially, taking them with them mentally. After that, my husband had an arrhythmia where his heart went over 250 and his heart was literally minutes away from running out of oxygen. So he had to end up being put a defibrillator in his heart, which was crazy to go through that. And amongst so many things, I feel like I was always on the border of grieving something. And I'm like, fuck, like, I really hope nothing happens. And well, thank God nothing happened. But it did put me down in the dumps. It came to a point where I just didn't even know what I was crying about anymore. And obviously that affected my work. It affected my deadlines. And that's why I'm so grateful for all my brand partners, because I was late like months with videos and whatnot. And they would just send me flowers and like keep me in their thoughts, even renew contracts for the future. So I'm genuinely, genuinely thankful for them. Never thankful for corporations, unless it's like the people that are in there are great people. But it was just one of those years, girl. And in November, I remember that I just sat on my bed and I'm like, I really need help. Like, I think this is what will define whether I stay on this earth or not. Like, that's how bad I was. And I remember I received a call with some bad news about a member in the family, and my heart spiked up. And I went to the ER and I sat there crying the whole time until they came to me and they're like, hey, your heart seems fine. We do want to see you back in 1 week. And I think that that was just their way of saying, we're like keeping you on watch because this is weird. Why are you just here crying and your heart's like spiking? And so I went back a week later, and this is my first time getting a primary care doctor because it's my first time having insurance in the US for a while. And she was so lovely. She made me feel so comfortable. And she was like, Andrea, I know you're not fond of medication, but would you just try it? Because I feel like you really need it right now. Because I walked her through my whole agenda, like things that I've been going through the year. She's like, that's a lot, baby girl. Like, could you just try this for me? And I was like, you know what? I don't think I can go lower than this. So let's just try it. And I tried it. And I remember her coming in with other doctors and they're all talking to me about like, please don't hurt yourself. We're here for you. And I'm like, I don't have time to think about that, y'all. Like, I'm just really busy. I just have to like keep going through it. And so I ended up taking medication. When I tell you that I immediately felt the relief within 5 days, insane. And a lot of people were commenting like, no, you cannot get, because I've been documenting my journey publicly. And they were like, no, you cannot feel the effects and whatnot. Bullshit. First of all, women process medications differently than men. Actually, we do feel the medications before men do. Second of all, did you know that studies show that psychiatric medications have not been properly tested in women until, I believe, like the past decade or two? All the history that we have on psychology and psychiatry and medications and whatnot have prioritized men so much that obviously we don't know the full effects to how it could affect a woman. So of course, I feel it differently. It was not placebo. Obviously, it came with some little side effects here and there, brain fog and feeling a little jittery. But the rest, it was just relief. I'm like, wow, I can finally process emotions differently. So I've been on Lexapro since November. No side effects, really. And yeah, that's been my little journey with mental health. I'm open about it. I'm happy about it. And I'm glad that I didn't let the stigma of, oh my gosh, you're on medication, keep me away from getting help.
Thank you so much for sharing. That's so much. How do you take care of yourself in those moments when you're not feeling good or you don't want to show up at your desk? Or do you have any wisdom to share about that? Or maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, 100%. I'm really honest with myself and also with my support system. Like, I have the best partner and the best friends in the world. Like, I'm just so grateful for them because they just get it. I've had situations. So borderline, for example, the usual thing that you'll hear people with borderline talk about is that we always ask people if they're mad at us because we can pick up on such quick micro expressions and micro cues. So even from the way that you text us to the way that you talk to us, if there's a slight change, we perceive it, which I think honestly is what makes me a great marketer too, because I'm able to perceive and like I can close a contract on the spot because I can read micro expressions so well. But on the other side, it's like if you're having a bad day and it has something to do with you, in my head, it's still my fault. And this also comes from like living in an environment where you always had to predict people's emotions. So that's where my borderline comes from. And so obviously I'm trying to like work through it and whatnot. And it's honestly gotten so much better. But I remember having friendships where I would be like, hey girl, are you mad at me? She'd be like, oh, this again. No, I'm not mad at you. It just felt so invalidating and so hurtful because I'm like, I can't control it. I'm trying my best, but I can't control it. Whereas now I have besties and I just go, hey, and they immediately know, they're like, no, baby girl, I'm not mad at you. I love you so much. I got you. Let's talk tonight, blah, blah, blah. So definitely surrounding yourself with good people. Like if you are at a place where you think you're the bad character in your life, before making assumptions, just make sure that you're surrounded by really good people first. Because for the longest time, I thought that I was genuinely a bad friend because I was always asking like once a quarter or whatever, which in my opinion, is not even that much. Like I'm just asking you a couple times a year if you're mad at me. And I had to cut away a lot of those people from my life and take those tough decisions that ended up being the best decisions of my life. Because subconsciously or consciously, I'm not sure, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. There's people that are just energy vampires and that are just not rooting for you in the way that you would want them to. And it's not their fault, but it's their responsibility to deal with it. So that's the first one, is I make sure to surround myself with really good people. It took me a while, but I finally grew discernment enough. The second is I do everything that I can to accommodate myself. Like last night, a friend really, really needed me at one of his performances. I'm a good friend. So I was like, I'm going to go. But I didn't stay through all of it. I like went, watched 20 minutes of it. I know I need to be up by 6 a.m. I need my 9 hours of sleep. I got to come back. If I know that I'm going to be like anxious because I have a lot of meetings in between, sorry, regardless of all the money you're offering me, I have to take the break in between. So it's like, I just know my baseline. So that's always something I recommend everyone to do. It's like, know your baseline. What are the things that you can actually do without hurting yourself or like even getting close to making your body or your mind uncomfortable, and really understand what those are?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Obviously, lots of therapy, lots of movement.
Therapy, movement.
Believe it or not, sunlight and movement actually do help. So, yeah.
Sunlight helps, as I say, from my January snowy window over here.
Not the LA first time it's rained in a while, horribly. So yeah.
I was just in California last week or 2 weeks, and it rained the whole time. And I was like, okay.
Oh my God, you should have let me know.
I mean, I was in San Francisco area.
Oh, got it, got it.
But yeah, I'll let you know when I'm in LA next.
Yes, like, yeah. I love that.
Okay, well, this has been amazing. Is there any like last minute advice that you want to graciously bestow upon our listeners?
I mean, yeah, I would say I'm not going to give the usual like trust yourself, believe in yourself, listen to your body, intuition, da-da-da. I feel like we're kind of tired about that. I would say like if there's anything that you take away from this is follow up with people that you probably ghosted or that ghosted you even. Just follow up with them as much as you can. Annoy them. It's okay. Get just the bravery to just reach out and ask for lunch, because you never know how any of that's going to pan out for you. Like the fact that this week I already got offered being featured in 2 major networks, it's just like unreal to me that I could have always just asked and I never did because I didn't feel good enough and why not. But there's the thing, it's like there's people out there that are less qualified than you, have less knowledge, less time in the space and whatnot, that just found the right angles. It's not even that they just got the bravery to do this. They just found the right angles that worked for them and for the other person. So definitely, if anyone crossed your mind through this episode, as long as it's not a toxic ex, reach out to them and be like, hey, I'd love to grab coffee. I'd love to grab lunch. And if you are an influencer and you are based in LA, there's definitely a lot of events that we're going to be hosting. So definitely slide in my DMs if you are interested in one of. But yeah.
Yay. Thank you so much. This has been an absolute gem of an episode.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. I am just so, so hyped, and I'm glad that we finally made it happen because I've been excited to be on for a while.
Yay! Thank you so much for listening to the Girl Gang Craft podcast. Head to girlgangcraft.com/podcast for show notes and more. See you next time.